Western nations try to empty Russia's war chest by imposing a price cap on its oil. But Kyiv says it's too high and the Kremlin has shrugged it off. So will it do anything to stop the conflict in Ukraine? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Darin Abugaita. So after months of negotiations, Western nations and their allies have agreed to cap the price of Russian oil at $60 a barrel. G7 countries, the EU and Australia hope it will reduce Moscow's ability to fund its war in Ukraine. Now, the limit only applies to crude transported by sea. So it means participating countries will only be allowed to buy Russian oil and petroleum products sold at or below the cap price. The Kremlin has been accused of weaponizing energy supplies. And the spokesman says Russia won't accept the measure. Moscow has already been selling crude at a heavy discount. And Ukraine's president wants the cap to be even lower at $30 a barrel.
Russia has already caused colossal losses to all countries of the world by deliberately destabilizing the energy markets. And the world cannot decide on its real energy disarmament. This is a weak position, and it's only a matter of time before stronger tools will have to be used anyway. It's a pity that this time will be lost.
Now, Russia has more than 10% of the world's oil and natural gas stores, making it a commodities powerhouse. And within the first 100 days of the invasion of Ukraine, China became the biggest buyer of Russian fossil fuels. That's according to the Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air. It also says India's imports jumped 23%. Neither country has signed up to the price cap. In the EU, Russian gas flows have fallen about 17%. Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands remain the bloc's biggest buyers. Let's bring in our guest. Joining us from Moscow is Sergei Markov, who's the director of Moscow's Institute of Political Studies and a former spokesman for President Vladimir Putin. In Berlin, Ulrich Bruckner, a professor of political science at Stanford University in Berlin. Joining us from Tashkent is Chris Weifer, who's the chief executive officer of Macro Advisory. That's a consultancy focused on Russia and Eurasia. Welcome to you all. Thanks for your time. Chris Weifer, so what impact will this price cap actually have on Russia?
Well, the price cap on its own will have only a marginal impact. For example, the budget, which has just been passed, assumes an average oil price of $70 next year, dropping down to $60 in 2 years' time. The big question is what will happen to volumes, because as of Monday, of course, the EU imposes a ban on importing oil from Russia anyway. It won't be importing any seaborne crude from tomorrow. And from next February, that ban will extend to the much more important and bigger volume of products. So the big question for Russia is how much of that volume it will be able to shift to other markets, to China, India, Turkey, and other Asian markets. And will they abide by the cap, or will they continue to the current formula, which is essentially about a 25% discount to whatever the Brent price is at the time? So the cap on its own isn't going to have much impact. It depends on the volumes.
Okay, got it. Sergei Markov over in Moscow, the Russian foreign minister is quoted as saying, we don't care what the price cap will be, we'll negotiate with our partners directly. But behind the scenes, that statement is clearly for public consumption. Behind the scenes, what do you think is going on in the Kremlin right now?
It's absolutely clear that Western countries, as part of the hybrid war against Russia, will use different limitation for Russian goods and different mechanisms. This price cap for the Russian oil, it's one of those mechanisms. Another mechanism also will be developed by Western countries. So Russia very much prepared for such hybrid economic attacks as this mechanism. And of course, Russia will lose some money, but same time, Russia hopes that maybe Russia also will get some profit because this mechanism implementation probably general prices for the oil and gas as well will be increased on the global market.
Chris was just saying a moment ago that we'll have to wait to see what impact this the cap as well as the EU ban coming into effect will have on volumes. Do you think that the volume out of Russia will be impacted? And could that then worry the Kremlin?
It's absolutely clear that Russia will have no any relationship with no any country which follow this price cap and this limitation of price for Russian oil. This not market political repression mechanism. Just forget about this. If some countries want to join this mechanism, they will be not able to buy Russian oil from Russia. Probably okay. They will buy Russian oil from another country, but from Russia, no. It's not because Russian, maneuvering. It's because Russia regards this as political repression and a violation of the market principles.
Okay, let's bring in Ulrich from Berlin. So Ulrich, historically, of course, Germany has been the largest EU importer of Russian gas. And when this issue of a price cap was floated earlier in the year, Germany was initially skeptical. A main concern, we understand, is that limiting the price for the Russian gas might trigger retaliation by Moscow in terms of a full cutoff for the EU. Let's talk about how much wrangling there was, first of all, amongst EU countries themselves to agree to this. And what is the point of view out of Berlin now that this has been implemented?
Well, Berlin was divided because we have a coalition that consists of different parties with different political priorities. There's on the one hand the Green Party that announced long before the war in Ukraine started that we have to transform the German economy into a fossil-free economy, and the war in Ukraine is speeding up the process of transformation. So they basically like the long-term implications of this. Then we have a liberal party that is very much into market economy mechanisms, and they don't like any form of a manipulation of market prices. And given that we live in a shrinking world in which everything is interconnected, it's extremely delicate to have such a massive effect on an important commodity like oil, not only for the European Union member states, but also for the global south. That is, most of them not rich enough to buffer consequences like rising oil prices because of such an intervention. And then there is a question of solidarity among the European Union member states, because not everyone is in the same way dependent on imports, and some even benefit from sanctions, like the almost feudal systems in Cyprus and in Greece, in which ship owners could benefit from the new situation, and they now have to pay their dues and get on board.
Right. So, Ulrich, who do you think this move is actually aimed at? Because a lot of the G7 countries have mostly decided to stop their own imports of Russian crude.
Well, it is a strong signal politically that the West stands united, and that was an important lesson learned after Crimea, in which the West appeared divided and not willing to take action and only react on what Russia is doing. That was definitely part of the calculation to invade Ukraine, that the West will stay divided and can't act collectively. This is still another strong signal that the West will continue to act, and it remains to be seen if it leads to something. But the political signal is definitely important.
Chris Wiefer, Ulrich is saying that there is a political signal that's being sent, but what do you expect the Russian reaction to be, if any?
Well, we're already seeing the reaction because, as I say, the more important factor is the ban on crude, which starts on Monday and then followed by the products ban in February. So Russia has been preparing for some time. It actually arguably has been preparing since sanctions first started in 2014. In 2014, Russia was not sending any oil at all to Asia. Now, China is Russia's biggest oil importer. There is the major East Siberian pipeline, which takes 1.2 million barrels of Russian oil per day directly into China. It's been built in the last few years. And in this year, the last few months, we've seen Russia really making strong efforts to build a tanker-based infrastructure to take more oil to Asia. So there has been kind of a lot of preparation put in place. But as I say, the big question is whether or not China, India, Turkey, the biggest buyers of Russian crude at this point, whether or not they will be adapt the price cap or will ignore it. And if they ignore it, then the impact on Russia will be relatively modest. But there's another factor as well, of course, to bear in mind, that Russia will not be able to shift all of the oil that it has been selling to Europe, particularly when the product ban kicks in. It will lose about 1.5 million barrels of oil per day, so it simply will not have the ships or the pipelines to sell to anybody else. That will be lost production next year. And so on the one hand, Russia will definitely lose volumes because of the bans, regardless of the price, and that will be a hit on revenue compared to this year. Secondly, it really depends on OPEC's reaction, because 1.5 million barrels of Russian oil will be taken out of the global supply. Of course, we have to wait to see what demand is like, and that critically will depend on China and COVID situation. But let's say the demand side holds up, then the question is whether OPEC will replace that lost Russian oil or not. If it doesn't, then the price of Brent will go up towards $100, and Russia will get $75 per barrel by selling to Asia, well above the current price of $60, which it will not sell to, as Sergei has said.
And just on the issue, Chris, of China, India and Turkey, I mean, part of this plan, or actually a large part of this plan, stops insurance and shipping companies from handling Russian crude unless that shipment has been sold at or below the price that has been set now by the group of G7. So there is some thought that perhaps these countries could buy Russian oil at any price if shipped or insured by non-European companies. Do you see that happening at all?
Well, there's certainly going to be a reduction in the availability of tankers. There's no question about that. European tankers will be reluctant, or will not carry Russian oil as it violates the cap. So the question is how much else is there in terms of tankers, Indian tankers, Chinese tankers? And we know from various reports that Russia has been buying up whatever tankers it can, oil tankers, etc., over the last several months. So there will be, it won't be a case that oil simply won't go to Asia because of the insurance ban. We've already seen some example of that, actually, when there was a similar type of issue to do with insurance or insurance cover. And India set up a separate ship registry based out of the Emirates, and that provided cover for the Russian ships trading with India. So I would expect similar type of arrangements, where it could be at a government-to-government level, it could be at individual bilateral companies that's acceptable to both. But what we're hearing from India in particular is that they believe that a practical solution to get around this can be done very quickly, which suggests that they've already negotiated with this with Russia. And we've seen this type of arrangement with India over the last several years as well. So I don't think that the fact that this is insurance-based is going to block the volume, but it clearly will reduce it.
Sergei, so if this plan then relies on each party of the supply chain of Russian oil to sort of attest and be honest with the price of shipments, how feasible do you actually think it is?
As our colleagues already mentioned, Russia bought more than 100 tankers during the last few months. Prepared for selling some of the Russian oil by Russian tankers. But I think economic analysts still didn't give us a reliable information, either it will be enough or not. And generally, how many tankers Russia will need to sell its oil to the Asian consumers. It's not clear. Yes, I tried to check different economic expert analysis, but they still don't have such a calculation. And but it's an important factor. It's also important that it will be some kind of two sectors of oil market. One, general oil, which is out of not under the sanction, and another is Russian oil. Probably, by the way, it will be not only Russian later. Probably, United States and European Union countries will use same mechanism against oil from Iran and probably from oil from Venezuela. And we also believe that sometime, if it will work successfully, absolutely sure that United States European Union will use same mechanism against OPEC countries, including Arabic countries, first of all. And they know about this. That's why OPEC very much support this Russian resistance to this new not market mechanism of the oil.
But how is this seen, Sergey, amongst people in Russia? Because according to some reports, and this is according to one poll that I read, this is a leaked internal polling data, in fact, commissioned by the Kremlin, that seems to suggest that support for the war in Ukraine has plunged from 55% of Russians who favored peace talks with Ukraine up from 32% in July, in fact. So people seem to be wanting to look for a way out of the war, and now you have more sanctions on the country. How is this viewed amongst the population?
People don't understand how this new oil sanction will function. And for example, I just buy some rubles, selling dollars, and I hope a little bit that the price will be momentum a little bit higher, but it stays the same. The market of ruble dollar exchange still don't understand what will be the consequence of this new sanction. But as to the atmosphere among people, about of course, when people see that this war continue much more long than we expected, most of the people, some people prefer to have more negotiation. But negotiation not about recognition of anti-Russia on Ukrainian territory. A majority of the people who want negotiation want peaceful solving of this problem. Okay. And this problem, this in fact, state to be. We don't want to allow United States to make anti-Russia military.
Let's bring in
military
Ulrich. Let's
Russia
just bring in Ulrich. We've been talking about European countries as well who have been suffering from high inflation. Some countries obviously at risk of recession as well. Households reeling from high energy bills. So surely governments in Europe and the G7 that took this decision on price caps, they must be weighing their own sort of political risks.
Of course they do. And it was clear from the beginning that sanctions work both ways, and it is a major challenge for political communication to keep the public on board. Because if people simply look at their energy bill, this is nothing that can be explained easily by, well, there are geopolitical tensions and this is your personal contribution. And so be loyal and support your government because we are in times of war. This is not that simple. So it's definitely a time of solidarity in the European Union that the richer ones support the poorer ones and that there will be exceptions if a country is hit harder. For example, Bulgaria and Hungary get an exception in the general discussion about what to do with oil imports, and they will keep doing this. But of course, this is by far the biggest risk, that social unrest can always pop up if things get out of control, and it is a very sensitive equilibrium. On the other hand, Russia isn't that monolithic as it appears if we just talk about the Kremlin. there's a lot also going on behind the scene. And with every move in this giant chessboard, someone else in Russia benefits from the new situation that changes the internal balance and could also lead to an imbalance that is equally disturbing as it is with high inflations in Europe.
Would you say, Ulrich, that the West has so far failed in weakening Moscow's energy exports, as that is that has been the aim for the past 12 months or so?
Well, this is just one element in a bigger picture. The West has not failed to send a strong signal that a violation of such dimension is cheap and you get away with it. Just like Crimea, you break international law and then we go back to normal.
Right. This, I mean, the signal is one thing, but the actual numbers and the energy exports, which the Western European countries keep saying they want to weaken, that hasn't happened, has it? I mean, according to one statistic that I was reading, I mean, Russia's on track to earn more this year from oil sales than it did back in 2021. And that's because of a surge in global oil prices.
Well, this is, again, just one piece of a bigger puzzle. Russia's business model is to sell fossil energy. And this is the first and most important element of their business model. And if the Western countries cut their dependency from Russia and move away into a next stage of a new economy, and Russia is being left behind, it's not a question of what has been produced in the last few months. This is a game changer in the long run, and Russia being cut off from technological imports will face a difficult time in the nearer future. This is not about this winter. This is a much bigger picture.
Okay, Chris Weefer, let's bring you in. I know you wanted to comment on the strategy, whether it's been a success or a failure.
Yeah, actually, if I can just combine those last two comments.
Sure.
And so two points to make. The first is that, you know, there's been a lot of kind of commentary, I think, the last few days. I would describe it as political economics. Those who think that the price cap and current action is going to bring a collapse in Russia and therefore force a change in Russia's position. It is not. As you've mentioned, Russia has made a lot of money this year. The trade surplus will be about $250 billion, or up from about $180 last year. And the central bank reserves are back up over $600 billion again. So even with the drop in volume, which I really is the key next year, what would be the volume? But even with that drop, then there's enough money in the coffers to kind of maintain this sort of economic progress that the Kremlin is now planning, which is to fund the military, fund key industries, provide employment support, and pay social programs. So really, there is, under any realistic scenario with the price cap, there is no danger of a major economic or financial collapse that could then force changes in Russia. But Ulrich is quite right. The bigger issue is the long term, the fact that this accumulation of sanctions, particularly the exodus of Western expertise, Western know-how, Western partnership, the ban on technology, all of which is going to have a major impact on the Russian economy and on people's lifestyles over the next couple of years. And that really is the second point, is you were asking Sergei about the opinion polls. It doesn't surprise me that those results would be now seen, because while people are not about to lose their jobs and they're not in any danger of being impoverished, their lives have been impacted, and people know full well that over the next couple of years that there's going to be deterioration.
Let's put that to Sergei. Sure. Apologies. Let me just put that to Sergei. Last 30 seconds, Sergei. I mean, my two guests are talking about the long-term impact on Russia. How much of a worry is that for you?
Nobody knows about long-term. I'm sorry. The world becoming so much chaotic and unstable, that's very difficult to predict long-term trends. It's clear. And same time, some people in Russia, they even glad that Russia will not buy technology from the Western countries, because a lot of people in Russia believe that it was wrong general strategy, that much more for Russia, much more important to produce technologies itself and to invest money to the high-tech industries, but
all
not
right.
just to the producing gas and oil
we'll
and selling
it
and biotechnology.
Thank you so much for that. Thanks, Sergei Markov, Ulrich Bruckner, and Chris Weefer. We thank you for your time. Thanks for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can join the conversation on Twitter as well. Our handle is AJInsideStory. From myself and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye-bye for now.